Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. I cannot wait to talk to you about this documentary. It is the best documentary of the decade, in my view. I'm so happy that we can get still quality art being done. I was super excited when someone yesterday mentioned in the chat that I should watch the documentary about Boogie 2988. But I didn't expect it would be that good. It was 10 times better than what I wanted, and I'm super satisfied. It's such a complex documentary with many layers. It's unbelievable. It plays with meta irony, and ultimately, I'm not even sure going out of this documentary, what is the current status of Boogie? Should he be seen as having a dark, sad life? Because the documentary starts like this, but then it moves into, well, okay, now he's got this 20-year-old girlfriend. Okay, she may have a little crooked nose, crooked face a little bit, but she's a beautiful 20-year-old female going out with him. What is there to complain for Boogie? Why would we be sad? And there he is making hallucinogenic mushrooms to get out of his depression. But it's like, how is that a sad life? The guy got millions of subscribers. He streams. Everyone wants to listen to him. And he has the 20-year-old girlfriend. And, you know, you can take him by pity because, okay, well, he presents his financial situation as dire and going toward bankruptcy. But it's like he says he put all of his money in crypto and then lost all of it. But that sounds like the boat accident. That sounds like I can't help but check this documentary through the lens of something I have no evidence for at all. But it's like, what if this documentary is a joke? What if it's him and the documentary maker saying, hey, we're gonna pull a massive, the dark, sad life of Boogie is going to be hilarious, and we're going to make everyone believe that I'm in bankruptcy and I stored everything in Bitcoin anyway because I've been in divorce, so I have no reason to accumulate property. I'm getting rid of my house. Let's do it. It's going to be funny. And I'm like, I'm not telling you that this is the background, that this actually is the case, that it's a trap, that it's a joke, this movie. But I'm like, what if that was a joke? It sounds like a joke. It sounds like there is so much pity being brought into it that it's almost exaggerated. This is where the meta irony comes in. And I ask myself, is this movie flirting with it consciously, or is that just an accident of the internet that the subject is so funny that this super fat guy became a celebrity? And it captures a moment of the internet that is so unique, where the people who rose on YouTube at the beginning, they were genuinely from a sample of social rejects, artists of all kinds. And I think we may never have this again. We may never have this again. John Drake says, what does this guy die from? Because people are saying rip Boogie in the chat. No, John Drake, Boogie is not dead. Boogie, there is a meme that goes around the internet on chats. Cake overdose, says end of the line Joel. There's a meme on the internet. Everyone every day jokes that Boogie is dead. When you think about it, it's the darkest thing possible, but give me 1 minute, I'll be back. It's kind of fascinating, this meme. This meme about rip Boogie is fascinating when you consider that there has to be a time where it happens for real. The day that Boogie truly dies, it's going to be hard to truly make the call, you know, to tell the difference between all of the memes, all of the jokes, and the reality. People are putting out, we'll get back to this subject very soon, but people are putting out this old classic of Ben Affleck versus Sam Harris. It is quite interesting to look at it through the lens of the current Israel-Gaza war.
I would argue that liberals have failed us. And the crucial point of confusion...
I don't remember my reaction as it was happening. I know that Ben Affleck was overly emotional about it. But when you look at back at it, it's amazing how much Ben Affleck saw through the anti-Muslim bigotry of Sam Harris and called it out the earliest. It's fascinating. He saw the whole plan unfold up to today, in a way.
Thank you.
Thank God you're here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the crucial...
Are you the person who understands the officially codified doctrine of Islam? You're the interpreter
I'm actually well-educated on this topic.
I'm asking you. You're saying that Islamophobia is not a real thing. That if you're critical of something...
It's not a real thing when we do it.
Right.
Isn't. I'm not denying that certain people are bigoted against Muslims as people. That's a problem.
Big of you.
But
why are you so hostile about this?
It's gross. It's racist. Shifty Jew.
You're not listening we are saying.
You guys are saying, if you want to be liberals, believe in liberal principles,
right.
Like freedom of speech, like, you know, we are endowed by our forefathers with an inalienable rights, like all men are created equal.
Ben, we have to be able to criticize bad ideas. And
of course we do.
Islam,
no liberal doesn't want to criticize bad ideas.
But Islam is the mother load of bad ideas.
Jesus.
So we have, but Nick.
Or how about the more than a billion people
those
who aren't
Muslim
fanatical,
too.
Who don't punish women, who just want to go to the store.
Wait a second.
Isn't
it fascinating? He's right, even by the standards of today. We've killed more Muslims than they killed us. You know, for all these talks of terror and how the ideology of Islam by Sam Harris leads to terror, it's fascinating to consider that we've done more terror into the Middle Eastern populations of Muslims than they did to us. So what's the ideology, Sam, that leads us to be... to have such a tendency to terrorize Muslims? I kind of have an idea of the ideology, but I won't say it.
Yet somehow we're exempted these things because they're not really a reflection of what we believe in. We did it by accident. That's why we invaded Iraq and put 4 million people.
We're not convincing anybody.
It's not specifically telling you that I disagree with what you think.
I know, and we're obviously not convincing anybody of you.
If you don't understand my argument,
your argument is like, you know, black people, you know, they show each other.
That is not my argument.
You're talking, ISIS couldn't fill a double-A ballpark in Charleston, West Virginia, and you were making a career
jihadists. It's global. It's a phenomenon of global jihadists.
I think that's the opposite.
There's ISIS. There's global jihadists. The question is the degree to which you're willing to say, because I've witnessed this behavior, which we all object to on the part of these people, I'm willing to flatly condemn those of you I don't know
willing.
And I've never met.
No.
Fascinating to rewatch this in the light of the current events. I would be much more sympathetic to Ben Affleck's view. I think I was to some extent then. I think there are some errors when he pours it down into the whole racism category. It's not so much the problem. There is a problem in the racism against Muslims by people who are pro-Israeli these days. But the problem is not the racism itself. The problem of the racism that you could raise is, okay, well, you guys have been telling us that racism is evil for years, and now you're being racist. Yes, that is a contradiction. You can call it out in certain situations. But the problem is there is a fight for existence, and the pro-Israeli side has decided at this point that they are justified in committing a genocide. And they don't care if it's not terrorists that they're killing. They will just go blindly. And they're doing it live in front of us as we see the reality deploy. Naberius says, Sam later regretted that he had said the motherload of bad ideas and not a motherload of bad ideas. That is interesting. But I think he may regret from a social perception perspective. But I think that ultimately we got to see into the true heart of Sam Harris. I don't think that the was an overspoke. I think he may have wanted to conceal it with A. But I think we got the true emotion of Sam Harris then, which is Sam Harris has been on a quest against basically Muslim demographics because he has always perceived them as hostile to the Israeli project. Lord Bibo says, breaking, Israeli military aircraft targeted the main water tank in Tal al-Zatar, north of the Gaza Strip. They are destroying the last available water. All right, well, I don't know. How is it that a tank leads to a river? I don't know exactly how that works. But maybe it was a big tank. I don't know. Revealing hesitation from Justin Trudeau. You know how there is a bunch of extreme Zionists right now on the public space who are rooting for, if you say the word ceasefire, you are our enemy. If you say the word ceasefire, you are part of the terrorist. That is extreme as a view. But somehow, we see that Justin Trudeau feels compelled by these threats. He doesn't want to be considered too pro-Hamas. And look at how he hesitates on the word ceasefire.
We need to see a cease. We need to see a humanitarian pause so we can flow.
Oh, you saved it in the last moment. Let's re-listen to this.
We need to see a cease. We need to see a humanitarian pause so we can flow. We need to see ceasing of the...
We need to...
We need to see a humanitarian pause so we can flow, we need to see ceasing of the levels of violence that we're seeing.
And it ends up resolving in we need to see a ceasing. I mean, at this point, Alex Jones was correct. It is a bunch of reptilians who are dominating over us. We need to see a ceasing of the levels of violence. So not a total ceasefire, not a ceasing of the violence. We need to see a ceasing of the level of violence. So that is ceasefire transformed into a euphemism right there live by Justin Trudeau.
We need to see a cease. We need to see a humanitarian pause so we can flow. We need to see ceasing of the levels of violence that we're seeing. We need to...
My God, reality is so funny sometimes. You can't make this up in fiction. A huge pro-Palestine march in Berlin, too big to stop by the police forces.
Free Palestine!
All right. So lots of enthusiasm to save the Palestinian population from the ongoing genocide. Goff says, Jeff, I have watched you a long time. Can you please just state your opinion on Jewish influence on European history just to satisfy my grog brain? Stuff like poisoning wells and sacrificing children and blood sacrifices. I don't think we have enough evidence and enough resolution on the past to tell you, oh yeah, in this village there was a well poisoning that was established and it was true. We just don't have this. I mean, you look at the witch hunts and you look at the legal system before recently, and it was just too brutal to bring the truth over hundreds of years. So I wouldn't go as far as to believe in any of these detailed story, because if I see a witch trial, I wouldn't believe in the witch trial either. That being said, whenever I think about Jewish history in Europe and the Roman Empire, I always look at these events from, I'm biased as a present man. I always look at these events and I'm wondering, would that story be realistic knowing what I know about the Jews today? Of course, it's treacherous. It's not a historical technique. It's not a legitimate technique to help you find the truth of the past, because who knows? The Jews of the Roman Empire may not even have been genetically related to the Jews of today. There could have been a bottleneck effect. There could have been different population claiming the same religion. But whenever I read these historical texts, I'm influenced by my experience of what I know about the Jews today. I can't help it. I look at it through the lens of, well, whatever has happened 2,000 years ago, I can know that much about it. But what's happening right in my face, I can know all of it. So that's how I approach it. Rodila Sid says, out of the 109 countries, it was all those countries who were wrong, and no Jew has never done anything wrong ever. Okay, the 109 country memes is back. All right, what else did we have before we fall into my apology of this great documentarist who is rising on YouTube? Game over. U.S. European officials quietly nudge Ukraine to seek peace. That would be a nice outcome. If the U.S. War machine was so busy kneeling and sucking Israeli dicks that it would cause, by accident, peace in Ukraine, that might be an interesting outcome. Well, Goff wants me to say something that I can't say, and I will have to ban you from the chat if you continue asking for these things. So let's talk about the Boogie documentary by Mike Klum, a new YouTuber. He starts his first documentary on YouTube. The first video of his channel is this right here, The Dark Side, Sad Life of Boogie, already at 236,000 views today, earlier today. And look at him. He has 10,000 subscribers. It's time to go subscribe to Mike Klum, because this guy is delivering a by-the-book, just textbook, and even better than the textbook, really, documentary. Perfectly edited, perfectly rendered, perfectly narrated, perfectly interspersed with the technical issues of filming a documentary. Just textbook. And I've been studying documentary filmmaking through history from the 1960s to today at the university level. I've seen a lot of documentaries, and I've studied a lot of branches of documentarists, especially the Quebecois ones. And this is a masterpiece, this documentary. The music is absolutely on point. He did a wonderful thing that I don't know. I don't know how you get the rights to this kind of music. There's a lot of classics, a lot of piano that's easy to get, but there's even the music Creep at some point, and it's a remake of Creep by someone else, so perhaps he got it for cheap. But it's a very big technical job to be producing a quality documentary in the context of copyrights and everything, and making it happen that Boogie would open himself to invasion of his private life to that extent. But let me give you the best segment of this documentary in my view, which is hilarious and sad, and I cried and I laughed at so many points of this movie.
I found that person and they happened to be 20, and I get that it's creepy to date somebody half your age or younger, but people can call me creepy if they want. If she's happy and I'm happy, then I will be the biggest creep you need me to be, as long as her and I are happy. You can be as mad as you want. Sexually, we both seem to be having an excellent time.
I would say that it's the best I ever had. What? You are so...
A samurai on vacation?
I was gonna ask if you could see it, but.
So in the front here, and I think, are you a YouTuber or something?
Yeah, I've been on YouTube for about 17 years.
You've been on YouTube for 17 years?
Yeah, 4 million subscribers.
Okay, and this is
my girlfriend.
Your girlfriend, who is much younger than you, suspiciously. It's never good when you say, well, she's an adult. Is this a sex trafficking situation? You keep looking at him and never answering the
question. Oh my God. With the creep music in the background.
And I hate it when people single us out. I hate it when people like...
We're gonna do that, though. It's to be expected. You're right. We're different. But
fuck them, right?
Yep, fuck them.
He's not manipulating me. I love him for him. He doesn't control me. We're a team. He supports me in everything I do and everything I want. He's my support system.
The absolute beauty of this documentary. It is so in your face, and this is relatively late in the movie, and it's even darker than this. It's much darker, in fact. For 30 minutes, this whole movie, so it presents itself as the dark, sad life of Boogie. And I'm like, bro, the dark, sad life of Boogie, this guy is fucking a 20-year-old, maybe not a 10 out of 10, maybe a 9 out of 10, because she kind of has a bizarre face, but so what? This guy is a 1 out of 10, 800-pound, like a guy about to burst. He has no chance to live, he could die at any second now, and there he is having sex with a fully dedicated, fully loyal 20-year-old, relatively beautiful by the body woman. How is that the dark, sad life of Boogie? But you have to get through the movie to get to this point, because for 30 minutes, this movie talks to you, shows you Boogie naked, taking baths, having trouble stepping outside of his bath, showing you his whole list of medical issues. And here's what I have to take. Here's what I have to take. Here's my medical expenses. And it tells the story of the failing of his YouTube channel, which has been the biggest YouTube channel at some point. And I don't know, eventually he may have gotten surpassed, but Boogie2988 is recognized as one of the OG YouTubers, one of the first YouTubers who became superstars through the free mechanism of YouTube. So for 30 minutes, it's like sad, sad, sad. And I'm like, okay, this justifies the whole title, The Dark Sad Life of Boogie. And they build a lot around his inability to save and the fact that he has an ex-wife who was managing their income at some point, and he needed her to do so because he knows nothing about money. And now he found himself with a too costly of a house, moving away from his wife. And he found himself incapable of paying for the mortgage. So that's one of the first rules. So you want to be a YouTube superstar? Listen to Papa Jeff. If you want to be a YouTube superstar, understand that your peak will last at most 1 year. And it might slowly go down or it might quickly go down after this. But you have to make sure that in this 1 year, you make enough money and enough savings and enough investments so that you can last 20, 30 years. Prepare your fall. This guy didn't prepare his fall. He took a mortgage. You should never have a mortgage as a YouTuber. You should pay for houses cash. If you don't have the means to buy this big house cash, then it's not your house. Because mortgages, they make you a victim, they make you a slave of the system. I understand that someone who has very stable employment, who's very confident in his ability to stay employed, maybe mortgages are sometimes justifiable for normies, but not for the YouTube lifestyle. You're going to get betrayed. There's going to be social phenomenon that you don't control on the internet. And they're eventually going to get at you. In his case, you know, look at this bear, this innocent and incapable to hurt anything bear. They went at him because he said the N-word and he talked loosely and provocatively on some live stream saying, oh yeah, my wife is dead, or someone in his life was dead, and so fuck her, she's dead. Like, he's done, in terms of self-cancellation, he's done about 0.01 JF, units of JF, okay? Baldur says, shit, this is real? I thought it was a movie. No, it's not a movie, it's a documentary. And this is where it's fascinating. I mean, you could make a movie like this. It would be very, a fiction wouldn't be very interesting. What's interesting here is that The Dark Sad Life of Boogie presents us, captures a moment that I know has existed, but there are some people on the internet right now who don't know that this is how it went. This was the internet. The internet, from 1995 to 2016, was a place where the big fat Magic the Gathering guy could become a worldwide celebrity. The internet has changed since then, and I think we may never go back. Once the normies were in, everything changed here. Once the normies were in, the same social ladder that exists in the normal world came onto the internet. And I don't think there will ever be a take back of power by big media companies a la CNN, Fox News. But I think that the normies as a force, they will be effective at keeping anything like the early internet from ever truly happening again. What was so magical in the early internet, and when I say early, I'm talking about actually the first 20 years of the internet, is that this mechanism by which you had to be an artist to even care about making videos on the internet led to the selection of a bunch of people to become celebrities on in this world that were fundamentally different from anything else we had ever seen. There were people that were never represented in Hollywood movies, never present in press conferences. They really came out. They came out of the closet, the fat artist, the leftovers of civilization, people who every day still exist today and are rejected by the world. And they end up in Magic the Gathering meetings. But they rose, and they rose to the point of their celebrity penetrating through time down to catching a 20-year-old relatively beautiful woman by the body. So that is something very special that happened in civilization. We won't be able to reproduce it ever, because as long as the normies are there to impose their social ladder of preferences, you'll always be a minor personality today if you're too autistic or too specialized on a given subject on YouTube. So it's impossible to recreate that moment. Rodita Sid says, Boogie is also the guy who shot a gun into the air when someone came to his house. Yeah, I know about this. But is it that grave? I think it's a very white thing to do. To shoot in the air rather than shoot into the other guy. It's a very white thing to do what he did. And I understand that there are laws, and I highly recommend not doing that kind of stuff. But let's be clear. Under the Second Amendment, I believe that these laws are abusive. These laws that make it so that, oh yeah, you can have a gun, but if you shoot within 100 meters of a residential housing zoned as A1C3, you are committing a felony. I think it's ridiculous that it's that way. I think that, yes, I don't want shootings in the air to be happening, because at some point, if they were to be so regular, at some point you're going to have accidents, and at some point you're going to have falling bullets, actually, by random, killing people. I get it. But this was a situation where he felt violated in his land. And as far as my morality goes, understanding that he was probably in a state where there was no castle doctrine. But as far as I'm concerned, castle doctrine should be the law everywhere on Western civilization. As far as I'm concerned, a violation of your land calls for a reply, and it is up to the people who own that land to determine what force is necessary. But that's just my philosophy. All this to say, I don't consider Boogie a felon in my heart. I understand that he's a felon by fact, but he's shot in the air. Deadstar says, yes, but it's always 100% legal to shoot if you intend to kill. Yeah, I mean, there's these weird situations where if you have a situation that there are situations where shooting beside someone is a crime, but shooting the guy isn't a crime. that is true. It's a fascinating apparent contradiction. End of the line, Joel says, agreed on the castle doctrine, but most countries do not allow their citizens to be armed. Yes, but this is another discussion. All in all, we have here a man who is a true artist and who has done the only sin of being autistic and not giving a shit. And, you know, he saw the whole internet rise with the censorship, and he is just like me. He is a guy of the 90s who looks at this and says, I consider that the N-word shouldn't be offensive. I consider that it's just a word, and we shouldn't be in a society that represses such expression. Now, you know, he shares these thoughts in the documentary, And it's great to see him stand for a kind of 90s vision of free speech, a much less constrained world. And he's right, you know, we shouldn't have words that cannot pass on the internet. It's a very sad thing that has happened to the internet. But there he is presented with his Magic the Gathering friends. And, you know, he's spending his Saturdays with a bunch of fat Magic the Gathering people. And the documentary goes through the classical steps of a documentary. You know, these cringy parts where, okay, now you are depressed, therefore we're going to try to set you up with a specialist of employment.
And disability, I can't. If that is the attitude that you're going to have when you approach.
Nice to meet you. My name is Dawn.
Dawn, I'm Boogie or Steve.
Okay, what do you prefer to be called?
Honestly, probably Steve. Let's go with Steve.
Okay, Steve, no problem. Whatever you prefer. And so you are here today because you are seeking employment.
Yeah.
You're seeking out new work opportunities.
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about your background and where you think you want to go with the experience that you already have.
I did work at a small gaming store back in 2006, 2007. I am disabled, recognized by the state of Arkansas, but also the United States government. There's that. Now, the downside of that is I am extremely depressed. So there's some mental health issues that we bring to the table. And then physically, I am morbidly obese. I have no references, no work history, and no education. And when you Google my name, you might see rumors that I beat my ex-wife and I'm also a pedophile. Should mention I'm also a felon.
Okay. What's the nature of your felony?
Aggravated assault.
How old is it?
About 2 years.
Okay. So I think there are some avenues you could explore.
Qubit says, I heard a hooker quit her job in order to avoid sleeping with him. That's quite an achievement, lol. Yeah, because one other aspect of his life that we learn about is that he's been spending $200,000 on prostitutes, having sex with these girls that he was catching on the internet. On this, apparently there's a website of prostitutes, and he was getting their services and paying them stuff and falling for the general thing that men fall into, which is not only do you pay the service of the prostitute, but he was trying to shower them with luxury. And and it's so sad because you see the kind of girls he paid for and it's like, holy shit, man. They're ugly, you know. It's like, I wouldn't fuck them at this point in my life. I wouldn't fuck them even for free. And he's like, he's browsing through the website and he's like, oh, you know, this girl is cute, a little fatter than I usually like, but it's okay. It's like, wow, man, you're going to pay $1,000 for this girl? I wouldn't touch her with a stick for free. Anyway, so that is the sad thing of this. This is the sad and dark part of his life. But then, okay, so he can't get employment because he's... I mean, this is the situation of YouTubers. We cannot get employment. Forget about it. People who came out with their real name, there's no chance ever. And so at some point, we see a scene where he is laying out his health problems for his girlfriend. That is quite moving.
There's only one of them, and so I'm not...
So they're talking about, will you leave him if he goes bankrupt and has no more house? Because he can't pay the mortgage anymore. He's currently living in that house. He's affording living in that house by selling his Magic the Gathering cards. And we can see him try to deal two cards for $400 each. And the guy at the Magic the Gathering shop only gives him $200 a piece. It's so fascinating to see the world of magic trading still operating in 2023.
I'm not just gonna up and leave him for money, because money's an issue.
Because I love him, and just imagining a life without him is difficult.
I mean, my biggest fear is dying on her. If I die in the next 2 or 3 years on her, that's just going to ruin her life.
I really want you to understand how actually sick I am. Like, I don't know if you actually get it, but this is my health summary. This is everything that's currently wrong with me. My risk for stroke or heart attack is astronomical. I am essentially a walking time bomb. And I'm so fucking sorry for that. I really, really wish I had taken better care of my body.
Yeah, I know. I'll never be ready for it, but I know. I don't want you to be alone.
I don't want you to be alone.
And this is where you have to start. This is where the documentary goes and throws something at you that you have to take in and say, am I being, is that a whole joke, this thing? Because you know this classic and cringy part in documentaries where they go to take hallucinogenics a la Joe Rogan, ayahuasca type of shaman ceremonies. They do this with Boogie. And you're like, well, I have this documentary telling me that he has a dark side life. I have the facts, which is this guy has the most beautiful girlfriend that a man of his category can ever wish for. Okay. And there he is at the door of death, ready to go to hell, and he can still throw a couple of last shoots of sperm with the hope of having a bunch of children representing him in this world. He's been marking history of the internet forever. How is that a dark, sad life other than the things that he's telling himself in his mind, you know? And there he is. Okay, we're going to try to fix the last-ditch effort part of this documentary. Is we're going to go into the wood with the shaman and you're going to be experiencing a life renewal through mushrooms.
Brains. People who experience trauma.
Yeah, so people were asking about his girlfriend. Is she a gold digger? I don't think she is necessarily a gold digger, but I think she has daddy issues. As Shamrock Shake says, she had no dad, basically, and so I don't know what's her situation. Did she have a good mother? But in any case, she was with a single mother and probably got into young adulthood and saw very little space for her to do anything else than basically identify with a social reject, because probably she also self-perceives as a social reject.
Childhood abuse, people who've gone through trauma, people who deal with post-traumatic stress disorder, and I'm all of those. To be honest, I'm scared shitless. It's one of the only things I haven't tried yet. So let's give it a shot.
My given name is Ryan Arthur DeLeoyo.
What I love about there we are. We're going to do a cheap version of the Joe Rogan jungle ayahuasca moment. And there it's happening with a guy somewhere in the US with gasoline to light up the fire. It's happening. This is what's absolutely crazy with this documentary. You're like, is this a fucking joke or what?
And I've adopted the name Flaming Star. There's one thing that's undeniable, is that there's always this question about why? Why am I here? existence. What's really happening? Who?
See this frame right there? Why am I here? Existence. What's really happening? Who am I? Is this a fucking joke? Like, those are deputies' questions. This is what Daniel Dennett calls deputies. They're things that look deep, but... And it's like, somehow it's going to work on boogies.
Who am I?
Yeah, and Ariel Soares says, he's a shaman? Lol. Yeah, what the fuck is this? There are shamans like this across the US. You can just call, ring them in for service.
That's what happens when you seek out hallucinogenics. It's going to allow everything else physically here to relax. The emotional stuff is going to come out. Trauma is going to come out. But afterwards, your atoms are going to go back into their original positions. That's why. He'll be mind, body, and spirit all one together.
Okay, so I won't play it. I will tell you, if you want to see this moment of Boogie 2988 on hallucinogenic mushroom, go watch the full movie. It is worth it. It is a good spending of your time to watch this movie in whole. It is absolutely entertaining. The hallucinogenic scene appears to fix Boogie. And then we end with Boogie realizing, hey, you know, my situation is not so bad. My situation is, okay, I don't have the stardom that I had a couple of years ago, but I've been lucky to be struck by lightning and to have shined so bright for a moment, and that's so much better than most people will accomplish. Why not take it as a win? Dead Star says, this doc looks great. Yeah, it is absolutely fantastic, because you ask yourself, these scenes like the hallucinogenic, is that a commentary on this kind of movie? Because it's kind of overdone, the whole hallucinogenic moment. They do it again and again these days. And there's always that kind of Joe Rogan moment. And you ask yourself, is Mike Klum here playing with my mind? And Mike Klum makes some editing where Boogie is like hearing the shaman and he's hearing the voices of the shaman at the end. And then he wakes up in the morning with an alarm clock. It is fascinating, the editing. Very, very well done. And it plays exactly in that meta irony space where, who was the guy? I did a coverage of his documentary about a pathetic YouTuber. The whole Sam Hyde stuff. You know the guy who did the documentary about Sam Hyde? He did a whole meta irony, but Mike Klum is kind of moving that style deeper. Yeah, it was iDubbbz. So iDubbbz was kind of overly meta-ironic in his coverage of pathetism. Mike Klum is taking it in totally another direction. He's fucking with your mind about whether this is a documentary to be taken at the first degree, to be taken at the second degree, or to be taken at the third degree. It is an absolute masterpiece. And at the end, it's like, he puts you the ska music that you hear at the end of every fucking documentary. And it's like, oh yeah, now everyone is happy. And we're looking at old videos of of Boogie. And you're like, what? The dark, sad life of Boogie finishes with him fucking a super hot girl by his standard, having a realization on their mushrooms. And everyone is happy, and he has all sorts of friends, and he has everything that you would want from life, perhaps except babies. But he's had babies, I believe, with his ex. I'm not sure. But anyways, he's going to have a shot at having babies with this 20-year-old if he still has testicles. So all in all, I love this movie. Go watch it. I am blasted away. The use of the creep music, you know, at this moment that I labeled as my favorite moment of the movie, this is fucking art. I mean, when they tell the story of the girl and they start the creep music.
We both seem to be having an excellent time.
I would say that it's the best I ever had. What? You are
so... But see, this is what's so beautiful. The internet allowed this. The internet turned this Magic the Gathering geek, because you see old videos of him. He was literally behind a Magic the Gathering cashier at some point in his life. And he's there and still fat. And like back in 1992 or whatever, whenever that was filmed, you can see that the internet has allowed a guy like this to become and rise as a star. And that is a demonstration of the power of the internet, the power of the blockchain. One thing that's also on my mind as we get through this movie is, if that's a joke, if this movie is a joke, it's a joke that Boogie is doing. And why would you want to do that kind of joke? It's perhaps because he has Bitcoin. I'm starting to think that Boogie is this gigantic genius who found a way to just make it look like his wealth went away, but it's really in Bitcoin, and there he is being a sugar daddy to this 20-year-old anorexic, and he doesn't give a shit, and he's like, oh yeah, let's do a documentary. Call it The Dark Sad Life of Boogie. I really want you to insist, Mike, on I'm in bankruptcy. If that is it, it's very well done in some sort of an escape from society type of strategy. Perhaps Boogie is sitting on lots of Bitcoin. I would like to think so. But the movie doesn't tell you this. The movie tells you he's really bankrupt, and you have to take it as a possible truth also. But all in all, I think it's a very good movie also for the rising YouTube stars to watch. Because you have to know that life as a YouTuber isn't easy. There will be lots of attacks against you. There will be lots of instability. But when you do have the goods, when you have what this life rewards you with, which in this case is the girlfriend of Boogie, you have to claim it. Because society will try to shame you from claiming it. But you have to claim it. Because you've taken all the risks. You were bashed on. You were told this is not a job by your aunt, by your uncle, by your boss, by your cousin. And you have to claim the bounty of the risks you have taken. That is very important to do as a YouTuber. Notice our in chief says, Jeff, you say it is a great thing the internet allowed a guy like Boogie to get that girl, but don't we complain the internet allows the reverse and a hideous woman gets access to Chads? I don't know. I've never heard of that complaint. What would that be, this complaint? Maybe it makes the girl dream that she can get the Chad. But if you had a system, a legal system of marriage that truly enforces commitment for life, that wouldn't be a problem. Now, yes, I would say it's a problem that every four thinks she's an eight. That is a problem, because it leads to these disgusting images of female ass being twerked across the screen, and it's like, this is not sexy. That is a problem. But I would say it's a minor problem compared to the demonstration of force that you see here. The demonstration of force is that in the world I come from, the pre-internet world, there was no way a Magic the Gathering local fatty would ever attract the standing that Boogie has attained. And yet Boogie has attained it by remaining himself. There is no doubt that Boogie is displaying himself. Now, the movie suggests that he has basically a personality disorder by which he presents a fake version of himself to the world, a over-pitied version. And I would say, yes, probably. You know, Boogie is constantly there reminding to the camera, look, I'm ugly. Look, I'm a monster. But I think that's the true Boogie. I think that was truly inside of him. And in this movie, they suggest that the mushrooms actually kicked his alternate personality out of his brain, because the shaman tells him, "Are you ready to let that personality go?" And he's like, "Yeah, please liberate me." And he goes into a self conversation. There's a very magical moment in this mushroom trip where Boogie says, he's talking to himself in his head, and the guy says, "Do you remember when you've built this facade that you interact with the social world with?" And Boogie says, "Parents, terrible parents, stewards." And then he says, and you never get to know what came to his mind then, but he says, that makes sense. Oh, yeah. And it's probably him thinking about an event of abuse or an event of trauma that he has experienced around maybe his parent, maybe his two words. It's not clear who that is. But something kind of clicked into Boogie's brain then, and he kind of understood that he was kind of mistreated or traumatized very early in his life, and that it has led him to display this whole victim facade. And I remember the video that I made about Boogie. I made a live stream about him at the height of his Twitch streaming career. And he had bombed my regular chat with all his viewers who came to see us. And I remember it was very much about explaining to Boogie that he was victimizing himself. He was kind of granting stuff to the feminists that he actually didn't believe. And I was like, don't kneel like this to feminism. It's an ideology that came to make you kneel, and there you are kneeling. And he was basically saying, I'm going to kneel just to get out of trouble. I don't even believe it, but I don't want trouble. So that is how the inquisitory system of belief comes to you. And people like Boogie are easily victimizable because they're already in a mentality of, hey, every time I'm a victim, I get some reward. Every time people take me by pity, people help me. You have to be careful with this on YouTube too. That's also a cautionary tale for young YouTubers. You may have the impression that begging will save you, but begging is always the last time that it saves you. Long term, you are always better looking good, looking in shape, trying to do your best to be a standing man, because people want to throw money at standing men, because people ultimately don't throw money at us to help us. They are willing to help at some points in your life, and you know, there are some critical points where you can say, hey, this is an appeal, I need your help. But never present you as a victim, because you can only do this once. You can be a standing man, standing for people's ideas, and people will reward you with their money for pushing their message. Because ultimately, that's why you're being paid as a YouTuber. This is what the young YouTuber must understand. You're not being paid to express your emotions. You're not being paid because people love you or want to help you. You're being paid because people want to induce you to say the things they want out there on the public space. You're being hired by your viewers, not so much for the content you provide them, but for the reassurance you provide them that your content is being broadcasted to 1,000 other people, 1,000,000 other people. That's why view counts matter so much. People want to pay you to say the things that they would have said, but that they couldn't. That is the key to YouTubing. And Boogie seems to have mastered it without knowing it at points in his life. Now, when I was looking at this scene with the creep music, I was brought into a series of research. I was like, there are so many good versions of this song. What is the version we hear in the documentary? So Creep from Radiohead has been inspired by Albert Hammond, The Air That I Breathe.
I could make a wish, I think I'd pass. Can't think of anything I need. No cigarettes, no sleep, no light, no sound.
You can really see the patterns that Radiohead eventually used as, you know, voice play by the singer. They are truly inspired by this. Noticer in Chief says, viewing the internet positively for allowing a guy like Boogie to get that girl is one side of the coin. The other way, more common, is the sexual market being skewed, where for the average guy, the average girl is now unobtainable. Because she's on the internet? I don't know. Maybe. But is she?
Just like an angel. Skin makes me cry. You float like a feather.
I kind of dislike the Radiohead version. Although it can be moving, I prefer radio. I prefer Creep being played solo piano, a cappella, and especially when you had deliveries after Radiohead, like the Scala and Colacny Brother version. This is so much more powerful than what Radiohead did with it. Look at this. Desirable white girls, all beautiful, all ready to inseminate, all singing on the perfect note. This is art. Oh yeah, I had forgotten, but I've seen this movie in the cinema, Shadow Band. He says it's the Facebook theme song. Yes, it's the theme song of the movie Network. I had forgotten that it's in there. Yes. Absolutely beautiful. I won't play too much of it because we are in the commentary space. Keith Woods says, for my public activism, I have been banned from PayPal, Patreon, TikTok, Linktree, Ko-fi, Twitter, Restart This Year. If you want to support my work, you can sign up to my Subscribestar. All links in the bio. Well, I'm super happy if Keith Woods is doing well on Subscribestar. Totally worth the investment to keep this guy speaking out his mind and sharing so much information. There was a case of misinformation. Misinformation on the side of the Israeli. Here they are claiming that the destruction of Al-Azhar University in Gaza, I believe it is today or yesterday, that it was induced by a secondary explosion, which indicates that Hamas was storing ammunitions, and oh, it's your fault. You were storing ammunitions in your society, in your university. That's why you blew up. And so there's the explosion that they claim is a secondary explosion. But this was debunked by Lord Bebo. Video analysis turns out you can actually see the second bomb being dropped from the sky. It is not a secondary explosion. See, you can see it as long as it's above the cloud, then you can't see it. But clearly there is the bomb, and right after it falls to the ground, it blows up. Goff says, sends $3. He says, for my public activism and love for the NSDAP, I have lost 3 jobs. Well, yeah, I mean, you can't do public activism for controversial things and be employed. Those are contradictory. That's why if you're like me, you just choose to go all the way and you say, all right, I'm going to become a public personality and I will never have a job again. Now you have to set your life up so that you don't end up on the streets like Boogie. Here we have the case of a white woman who's writing a book about white privilege, and it's a book about a white man, main character who confronts white privilege and has a crush on a black woman. And then the white author got mobbed by fellow progressives for writing the book because she's a white woman, so she shouldn't be talking about these progressive subjects. So it started where she was super happy to announce that she had a publisher. Gentlemen, it is with a heavy heart that I inform you, white woman. So that was still in her dreams, dream announcement. And so here is some critique that she's undergone. I've pretty much accepted that the publishing industry is a place for bored white woman to become wealthy off of subpar writing, but the audacity of this premise, lol. So you have the progressive criticizing her for appropriating a black character. As a Wellesley student and a Macmillan author, I'm troubled by the concept of this book. Written plus edited by Wellesley alums and published by an imprint of my publisher, pretty sure we agreed a while ago that white people shouldn't write plots centered on racism and BIPOC trauma. So here you have a white woman who has decided to go all the way to serve progressive ideology, but the progressives aren't happy about it. We have some fighting scenes from Al-Qassam, street fighting against the IDF. Mostly blowing up of tanks. This comes from yesterday. Why do you do all this editing? It gives me a moral tint to the video that I don't like, because now I must understand, okay, this video is presented to me by someone who wants to make it spectacular and who wants to favor the Palestinian side. Why not just show the truth?
تولع.
People are asking if this is real. It looks like very edited real video, but you never know. There will be a point at which AI will be able to make these look very, very real. But it's not been denounced by the community notes for now, so I would say it's probably factual at this point because it's been on for many hours on Twitter. Mark Meadows sued by book publisher after testimony squarely contradicts 2020 election fraud claims. So here's the case of a book editor that sues its author for lying in their book. And the supposed lie is that the election in the US was stolen. I don't like this. When you're an editor, you have the responsibility to check the facts and be satisfied that the facts are what people would believe through a rational process at the moment of publishing. But you can't go back later and say, "Oh, well, you lied. Those were all false statements." Well, you published it. You had the responsibility to check if there were false statements before you published, not after. Neberius says Kim.com posted an AI-generated movie trailer that was pretty impressive. Okay, I'll have a look at it later tonight. And Deadstar says, any opinions on this song?
Here's one thing you need to do before.
Well, Smashing Pumpkins, Bullet with Butterfly Wings.
Is a vampire sent to drain.
Mama JF liked this music. She had a moment where she was playing this throughout the house.
Secret destroyers hold you up to the flames.
I think it's a great use of the bass.
Thank you.